It's time for a more in-depth look at today's news. It's time to find out who's pulling the strings. It's time for the Behind the Curtain podcast with your host, author Jeff Reynolds.
Hi, I'm author Jeff Reynolds, and this is episode 26 of the Behind the Curtain podcast. Before we begin, I want to remind you to check out my new website, www.jeffreyreynolds.net, and you spell Jeffrey J-E-F-F-E-R-Y. This is where you'll find all of my content from all the different platforms where my articles can be read. Also, I want to ask you a favor. When you go to jeffreyreynolds.net, please sign up for my newsletter. I won't spam you, and I'll send out a couple of emails a month, tops. This allows me to keep you updated on all the cool new stuff I'm doing in 2020. I made it really easy, too. Just go to the website and click the link at the top that says subscribe to the newsletter. And if you like this podcast, please consider a paid membership. You can help support this podcast with a small monthly donation. The more I can monetize the podcast, the more time I can spend on it, and the better the content will be. Your investment will be a win-win. Go to anchor.fm/behindthecurtain and click on the big old support button right at the top of the page. A couple of weeks ago, I talked with Gabe Johnson, a retired Marine who lives in downtown Portland, one block from the Justice Center. This week, he returns to give us an update. Gabe was given the opportunity to participate in a town hall on race in Portland with Mayor Ted Wheeler. He came away unimpressed. Gabe has also started a fundraising effort to help the chaplain service for the Portland police. He's gone from not believing the protests devolved into anarchy to believing Portland must use as much force as possible to sweep the riots off the streets. Gabe tells us why the Portland police need our support now more than ever. My second interview is with Caleb Howard, a pharmacist in Lake County, Oregon. He tells me the hoops he's had to jump through just to keep his pharmacy open under the OSHA-enforced COVID-19 guidelines, and how Kate Brown's orders have forced him to either discriminate against disabled patrons or close his doors and offer curbside pickup only. This is an important review of how the coronavirus lockdown orders have had serious unintended consequences. Don't forget to subscribe to the Behind the Curtain podcast wherever you listen to it, and please leave a positive rating. The more subscribers and the better ratings, the higher Behind the Curtain will rank on podcast services like Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and many others. Stick around to the very end so you can hear the full version of I Am America, the theme song, by my buddy Brian Futch. Hey, did you know I wrote a book? It's called Behind the Curtain, Inside the Network of Progressive Billionaires and Their Campaign to Undermine Democracy. It's an examination of the dark money on the left that continues to fuel the worst of the swamp creatures in Washington, D.C. There's a real appetite out there for folks to learn about who's pulling the strings on the left and what their ultimate goals are. I've done several speaking engagements, and I'm looking for more. If you know of any conservative clubs, Republican groups, Tea Party or 912 clubs, or anyone else who would get something out of following the dark money on the left, please email me at jeff@jeffreyreynolds.net. Search for Behind the Curtain, Inside the Network of Progressive Billionaires and Their Campaign to Undermine Democracy in stores or online at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, or Simon & Schuster. It's available in hardback, Kindle, or Nook now. Check out whoownsthedems.com for more information. Here now is an update from Gabe Johnson.
Yeah, so tell me what you've been doing. I know we spoke a couple of weeks ago, and you had sort of a change of heart about what was going on down at the riots downtown. So what's the latest? What's gone on in the last couple of weeks since last we spoke?
Well, you know, I won't say it's a change of heart, but it's definitely a hardening of my stance, where things are at. And so the last couple of weeks has just been, you know, a lot more interaction with people online from around the country.
Recently, yeah, you've been getting quite a lot of coverage, haven't you?
You know, this 5 minutes of fame has lasted about 10, maybe 20. But, you know, hopefully it'll last, you know, quite a bit longer than that, because I think there's a lot more that needs to be done here in the city. And I think we're just now getting started, especially since I did that town hall the other day. A lot more is, as far as my eyes have been open to, you know, who's actually been left out in this whole thing. But to get back to what you asked me a couple minutes ago, you know, a couple weeks after this standing for justice and the flag thing happened, we went out and contacted Nine Line to do a promotion to kind of give back to first responders. And when I say first responders specifically, I'm talking about the Portland Police Bureau and Multnomah County Sheriffs. So after contacting Portland Police Bureau, they thought that the chaplains would be best to give support to, because chaplains aren't paid. And just like in the military, chaplains are generally the first people that are in touch with those that are in distress. A lot of times people don't want to go to professionals and they just want to seek out the chaplain for, you know, advice, or they're the first person that will help them. These people aren't paid. And so they take officers out to, you know, lunches, dinners, they help them, their families, and they're not paid. And the things that they do, they're not covered. It's all based on donation. And so I've got a friend who's a Portland police officer, and, you know, I talk to her just about every day about what's going on. And, you know, this is great, because, you know, it's gonna give some funding where traditionally police don't have funding. And we talk about defunding the police and taking things away from them. You know, this is actually something that we can actually give something back. And so
that's really cool. So you're selling branded apparel to basically help the chaplains, help the officers get through what they have to get through.
Yeah. And to make note, and Sheriff Reese actually made note of this, is that, you know, for Multnomah County, their chaplains actually help the inmates along with the officers. And officers. So it's kind of a double whammy there when we're supporting them. So,
yeah, that's interesting, because they obviously have to deal with everybody equally. You know, the folks in jail. So are they actually interacting with the protesters as well?
Anyone who's locked up.
Yeah. Gotcha. Okay. So tell me about this town hall that you went to the other night. How did that go?
You know,
first of all, what was it all about?
So the town hall was basically race relations and in Portland, and how do we deal with those and dealing with those. One of the things that people have heard about, and specifically this group that people have heard about probably since this thing's happened, is Reimagine Oregon. I've heard that name being thrown out there, Reimagine Oregon. And I'm like, man, what the hell is Reimagine Oregon? I have no idea what it is.
Right.
And what I found out is it's a group basically by millennials, for millennials, that are not inclusive of anybody, you know, that's not, I'm just gonna say over the age 35, because they have their own view of you know, this whole movement, protest, whatever you wanna call it, and it doesn't include me, and it doesn't include anyone older than me. I couldn't believe what was coming out of this woman's mouth at the time that I heard it. And I'm going to jump forward to the following day, and then we'll go back to the rest of the town hall.
Okay.
I get this message from this woman, and I won't give her name, but prominent Black family here in Portland. That was a name that you'd heard growing up, because when you're from Portland and there's an actual neighborhood, which there isn't anymore, families knew each other. So right. I thought to myself, well, this is going to go one or two ways. She wanted me to reach out to her, and this is going to go one or two ways. Either she's going to blast me, or she's, you know, he's gonna say something nice. And I couldn't believe the first thing that she said that came out of her mouth. And she's like, "Now I want to thank you so much for saying all the things that our community doesn't want you to say."
Yeah.
Because we all know it's true. And people want to just, you know, keep it in the dark. So she's
interesting.
Like, I want you to know that this is thank you. And I could tell that she was, you know, older, sound like either, you know, my grandmother, she was still alive. And so I was like, wow. But we were talking for about probably 60 minutes. And one of the things that she said that was so, so disappointing, even people in her family, the millennials, her words, the millennials told her that it's time for you old people to step aside and allow the youth to take over this movement. And, you know, we both, after she said that, and as I was at the town hall and I'm hearing, you know, these millennials talk about, you know, their vision that doesn't include anybody, the first thing that I'm thinking while I'm sitting in a town hall is that there's thousands of years of experience in Portland when you talk about the Black community that is not even being tapped. And we got to go back to Vanport, all the way to gentrification in the 90s or regentrification in the 90s, all the way through the 2000s.
And you're talking about people that have spent decades in the civil rights movement.
Exactly. We talked about that too.
Yeah.
And these, and including me, and are not being included.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it really opened my eyes, because I always just, you know, I've been thinking to myself, man, you know, I'm 49. I've got, you know, 49 years of experience and probably 30 more than most of these kids that are out there. But through that conversation, I just realized that there is a lot of people that just are excluded.
That's really interesting. And I think you kind of see that nationwide too, right? I mean, this is largely a movement of youth who don't want to listen to their elders in their community and talk about a sort of a holistic solution to some of the problems that they're addressing.
Right. So it's destined to fail. And we're seeing that right now.
Okay. Expand on that. Why do you say it's destined to fail?
Well, When you don't take lessons of the past, you're destined to repeat them. But to go beyond that, your voice or their voice is not a mature voice. It's one that's going to further hurt the Black community, because eventually people are going to get exhausted with this and say, "Hey, we started out this movement and we were for Black lives because we're tired of what's happening, the brutality, people dying in the street. We're tired of that. But what's happening right now doesn't represent anything like that." So they're going to exhaust, this movement will have exhaustion. It's going to face exhaustion because there's no leadership. There's no real foundation. It's mayhem in the streets, and eventually it will be squashed.
So
all the goodwill that was for this movement that had been built up over all these years is going to get wasted. So I say we're going to be in a worse off place if we don't change something now.
So you say it's leaderless and they don't really have a solution in mind. It sure seems like that from the outside, from a guy who's not protesting, who lives, you know, just on the outskirts of Portland. It seems like there's not really any objective that they're trying to achieve. It's just violence and mayhem and chaos downtown and setting things on fire and destruction. There doesn't seem to be any sort of goal to the movement. Is that accurate?
Perfect example is last night. Last night, protesters down at the ICE detention center. What was that about?
Yeah.
If you watch the video, it was nothing. It had to do with nothing. They're not even chanting anything, but simply antagonizing the federal officers to basically, you know, feel their fire for their cause. And that's basically by getting beat in the street. Didn't happen.
So, yeah, I've heard that before, actually, that the protesters are trying to egg the officers into some sort of confrontation. That you know, I heard from a good friend of mine that went down to the protests at the East Precinct building, or the the sheriff's office there on 47th. Yep. That they would form a skirmish line almost around the police that are there defending the building, and then they would all of a sudden jump, like they would charge for 10 feet and then stop, you know, in a very organized line, just trying to get the cops to say, you know, to confront them because they crossed over this line that they said not to cross, you know, that kind of stuff.
Exactly.
Yeah.
To further expand on organization, and this is something that everybody should be thinking about. But Marquise Love, he's on the run, right?
Right.
Tell me this. Ordinary citizen, me and you, we beat somebody up on the street. How many places are we going to get to go hide? Especially in a, we'll say, 24-hour period, how far away are we going to get?
Right.
Think about the fact of how organized that these people are, that they've been able to snatch this man up off the street. With all the technology that we have in this world, not one sighting of this person.
Well, except on social media. He's gone on social media begging for money.
Well, yes, right? For him.
Yeah.
How do you hide? How do you hide from the law enforcement machine that is looking for this guy without help, without funding? So are they organized? Isn't every terrorist organization? And I'll keep calling them that because that's exactly what they are.
Really? So are you referring to Black Lives Matter as a terrorist organization, or Antifa, or who is it that's causing all this mayhem?
I will talk about Portland only, but the Black Lives Matter movement in Portland has been co-opted. And so if you allow yourself to be co-opted by an organization that is terrorist, and you beat people in the street, I've witnessed it in person. I've witnessed it on live feeds. If you beat people in the street and you allow yourself to be co-opted by known terrorists, then that makes you a terrorist also. So yes.
Wow. So I know that a while back, I think it was Rose City Justice. I think I have the name right of the organization, that what they do is they get these people together at the Revolution Hall and Southeast Stark and 12th. And that's where they gather to do their marches down to the Justice Center. And I think in June they had stopped marches and gatherings, at least for one night, because they were too afraid of what was going on with the violence with Antifa and that their movement was being co-opted. It sounds like they have stopped caring about that. Am I on the right track there?
Well, they don't even attempt to you know, hide it. They don't even want to talk about it. And I say that, and I really want to get this woman's name, so I'm gonna look at some notes here real quick.
Sure, sure.
Because I don't want to misrepresent myself or anyone else.
But right.
I could not believe this. It was something that was discussed at the town hall. Course, can't find it. However, you know, I'll try to get her name. She's in charge of Reimagine Oregon.
Okay.
One of the things that she had said about the gentleman who got kicked in the face and beat on the street on Saturday night is that she was like, well, I haven't seen the video. I only heard some audio. However, you know, this guy in this truck, he must have been a Proud Boy, and he must have, like, done something to deserve this. And, you know, if people get, you know, injured in this struggle, then, you know, that's just what happens. And, you know, it was probably his fault. And we all saw the video. We've all seen it at this point.
Yep.
I posted it, you know, Sunday morning because it kept getting taken down. And so I put it online and I've watched it a thousand times. And I couldn't believe what was coming out of her mouth. Followed up with Commissioner Hardesty and her comments that there's only been one night of riots in Portland. And come on, there's just a few bad apples, you know, that are at the protest. And there's more than just a few bad apples. There's hundreds of bad apples. This whole, you know, narrative about this isn't happening, or, you know, blaming it on other groups, it takes away from everything that, you know, the Black Lives movement or Black Lives Matter movement started out to be. Because now we're just like, and I'm gonna say it, because we all think it, like, these people are idiots if they can't simply agree with what we all see that's going on. And until then, we can't even take our leadership seriously. So how are we going to work with them?
Yeah, no, that's a very good point. And, you know, I think it's become evident that, you know, they're blaming the wrong folks. And for example, Ted Wheeler said that the whole reason that things got violent downtown was because of the presence of the federal troops, and well, they withdrew them, and now things have gotten even worse. So I'm not sure what else. I mean, what else can they do? I mean, so last night they also set fire to the county building, right? And so all of a sudden now that, it's public buildings that Portland owns, you know, private property is fine. You know, insurance covers property. But, you know, all of a sudden it's a public building. It's a government building. Now things are getting serious.
Yes. And I'm going to go back to Ted Wheeler here in a second. But what you just said about the federal troops and this myth that they've left. If you think about military, when the military goes into a country, the military never leaves. I don't care. And I'm a veteran. We never leave.
Right.
We left the Philippines maybe, what, five, 10 years ago? And yeah, I think that goes back to World War II.
Right.
The federal officers that are here still are maintaining security of their building. But you got to think there's some important rallies that are coming up. One, there's a Marxist rally that's going to be, or anti-Marxist rally that's going to be held at the federal building on Saturday at the federal park. So you better believe that there'll be federal officers on alert securing that because it's their park. There is a next weekend, a NAACP rally, I believe on Saturday, and then on Sunday, a Trump cruising. So, or it could be the other way around. All going to be happening downtown, 3rd Street, federal building, federal courthouse. They're prepared.
Yeah. Yeah, no, they're going to have to be because Oregon State Police withdrew and said we're not going to go where they're not going to prosecute these crimes. So what's the point?
I mean, it's that simple. It's that simple.
Yeah, yeah.
I want you to help me out with something here.
Sure. And
regarding Ted Wheeler.
Okay.
Because I really, really would hate to see him not follow through on an invitation. And at the town hall, he invited everybody that was there, participants, to reach out to him, contact him, and he wanted to work with us and involve more people of the community in resolutions going forward. So, day two, no return phone call from Ted Wheeler. Mm. Hopefully, again, he follows through. But if you could you know, make sure that we mention this either on air or in print that, you know,
yep.
Still waiting for him to reach out.
Yeah, absolutely. This is, yeah, it's been, it was Monday night, right?
Monday night.
Yeah. That's, yeah. Who knows what else he's got going on. I hear he's got his own personal issues to deal with. So, you know, maybe he's a little preoccupied.
You can't make proclamations on television and then not follow through.
Right.
Especially at a delicate time like this.
No doubt, no doubt. So this was actually a televised town hall, and was there any sort of resolution to what needed to happen?
No, there wasn't. People basically, you know, stated their opinion. I don't think that people really came prepared to talk about the issues at hand. It was more prepared statements. I asked, everything that I had to say was in rebuttal, but in addition to, you know, my statements. And so I think that it's great to see that we've uncovered what's not happening, and that's the inclusiveness in our own community and the people that are proclaiming to lead this march. But again, the next thing is, what is the next step? Because after the town hall, everyone went their own way. People talked about doing things to be in action and, you know, create your own list about the things that you've done. Well, it shouldn't even be about that, but I'm going to tell you, I'll give you my list. You know, this is our second time talking about this issue.
Mm-hmm.
Been on National Fox channel multiple times. Been in the local media, continuing to put the light on this subject. I'm so passionate about this, I'm not gonna stop until something happens. But in addition to just that, supporting our you know, police officers and doing it on a national scale and asking help from people nationally and getting help from people that are national.
Mm-hmm.
Doing things that are positive and for the city of Portland. If we're supposed to come and or if we're supposed to leave that town hall, you know, with our list of accomplishments and try to come back and say, hey, this is all the things that I've done, but the most important thing we're not doing, having town halls, getting people, maybe since we can't do it in big groups and, you know, micro groups, talk about the issue, do it virtually. But again, there's no inclusiveness. Starts with Ted Wheeler, no inclusiveness. I'm waiting, Ted. Then we go to the millennials that are in this movement. They're not including, you know, anyone. They're elders, period.
Right.
Black community, or Reimagine Oregon, not inclusive of the Black community. We have 5% of our population. 5% of our population in Oregon is Black. The majority of the population is spread out across the Portland metro area. So when you think about Portland in itself, what's the population here in Portland? Maybe 2%, 3% of the total population here in the state of Oregon. And we can't get together and have representation of our own people because we're not talking about a whole lot of people.
Right.
5% of the population in Oregon, and we can't get together and be inclusive and have one voice. And I think if we did that, then it would be unified and we wouldn't have all this shit that we have in the streets.
So let me ask you this. I'll give you a few minutes to talk about this. What are the issues for the Black community that need to be addressed that haven't been addressed in Portland or in Oregon?
I think the biggest thing is police reform. And when you talk about police reform, these people have already got part of their carrot. Defunding Portland Police Bureau. Rather than defunding, we should have reallocated, and even if we had to recreate positions for the Portland Police Bureau, because a lot of times officers go out on a call, and really a mental health worker should be dispatched to that call, whether it's dispatched through the county services, or whatnot. I was corrected a while ago because I thought that the the street response team was going to have social workers and a social aspect to it, but they're not. But they should. So reallocate funds, don't defund, because if we defund, not only does it have a negative connotation, but we're just take, and we're not putting the money back anymore. So I'd hate to see all this money being taken away and then reallocating it to someone's pet project. And I think an example of that earlier this year. We don't have to talk about that. But that's what happens, right? So really reallocating those funds to bolster, the relationship between the Black community along with...
Well, wouldn't that require more funding? I mean, to defund the police means less training, worse training, fewer officers to reach out to community members and work with the community to do community policing and keep the community safe.
Right. Let alone, and these are the people that are getting, you know, paint bottles thrown on them and rocks and frozen water bottles and all this. So you're breaking down, how much more can we break down the mental resilience of these people that are fighting?
Basically, who would want to be a cop right now?
It's very tough. It's very hard. A lot of them don't want to go into work in the morning.
Yeah. No, I mean, you've seen mass numbers of retirements. It's impossible to recruit new cops. It's a real mess for the Portland Police Bureau, and they're doing the best they can. But I mean, they need more. They don't need less.
Not only are they fighting the population, the city, the citizens of Portland, at least a small group of them, but they also are fighting the city commissioner because. Hardesty would love nothing but to dismantle the police bureau.
Well, what's her solution when she finally dismantles the entire police bureau? What then? What's her solution to the problems in the streets?
She doesn't have one. She hasn't put forth one. Not solutions. We all can be idealists, but in politics, it only goes so far. She hasn't put forth one solution that. The average person, me and you, would want to get behind the city. Again, I'm sure she has her pet projects, but that is not inclusive of the citizens of Portland and what we want to see as far as safety in the city.
Yeah. All right, so let's give it one last plug here. The apparel line that you've come up with, and this is about helping the police chaplains so that they can do more outreach for the on the street police and help them to deal with what they have to deal with. So tell me all about that.
So we just talked about defunding. So we want to fund. I want people to help me fund. The police. And when I say fund the police, it's fund these volunteer positions that are usually retirees doing a great outreach work to officers, sheriffs, deputies, even those that are incarcerated. So police and sheriff chaplains is who this is going to go, who the proceeds of this is going to go to. And so myself, Nyline Apparel, came up with Stand for Justice. And part of being standing for justice is justice for all, standing up for the injustices that we see. But this is really about just supporting our police, supporting those who support us. And if we can't, as Americans, as Portlanders, show these police what they mean to us by purchasing a nine line t-shirt, sweatshirt, tank, gosh, what does that say about our humanity? We should be giving more back to these people. They have gotten too much taken away from them.
All right. So where can we find this Nine Line Apparel? Do you have a website?
Yeah. And it's nineline apparel.com. And then just if you do a search for Fight for Justice, you'll pull it right up.
All right. Well, Gabe, once again, I appreciate your time today. This is going to make for a great article and a great podcast episode. The last podcast went insane. So you've done a uniquely good job of shining the light on what's really going on in Portland downtown and the effect on people who, like yourself, who live down there and people who work down there and the cops that are trying to keep it all clean and safe. So thanks once again for your time. I appreciate it.
All right. Well, thank you.
All right. And I'll get this going. I should have an article up by the end of the day today. So let's, or by tomorrow morning. So.
Okay. Just all right. That'll be cool.
All right. I'll let you know.
All right. Thanks, sir.
Thanks, Gabe.
If you like this podcast, the best way you can support it is by leaving a rating and subscribing. And don't forget to buy my book, Behind the Curtain, Inside the Network of Progressive Billionaires and Their Campaign to Undermine Democracy. Now it's on to my second interview with pharmacist Caleb Howard of Lake County, Oregon.
And the pharmacy is Howard's Drugs.
Okay.
And I am Caleb Howard. I am one of the pharmacists, along with my brother, Jacob Howard, and my father, Jeff Howard.
Gotcha.
My brother and I are fourth generation pharmacists at this drugstore, and my family has had six pharmacists serve the Lakeview community as pharmacists.
Okay, so you're in downtown Lakeview?
Yes.
Gotcha. Okay, and so tell me in your own words what happened with the pharmacy and how that came down from the state of Oregon.
So they brought on the mask mandate, which had the corresponding guidelines, and we went through the guidelines by the letter as best we could. There's conflicting information within the guidelines, depending on where you look. And essentially, it requires masks for everybody, with the caveat, if there's a medical condition, I can even read the actual language, the individuals who have a medical condition that make it hard to breathe or a disability that prevents the individual from wearing a mask, face shield, or face covering can request an accommodation from the business or indoor-outdoor space operator to enable full and equal access to services, transportation, and facilities open to the public. And we totally agree with that sentiment of, I mean, pharmacies are about service to their communities and full and equal access to services, like, totally, definitely.
That's federal law, too.
Yeah, so we sought to be compliant with that aspect of the guideline. And, you know, Lakeview's high elevation, we have an elderly population. There are a lot of people who have legitimate medical conditions that cannot wear a mask for any extended period of time. And we know these people. We know when they go to the doctor's office and they put on a pulse oximeter with a mask on and it drops below where it needs to be and they have to take the mask off even at the doctor's office to get it back up. So it's a legitimate thing. And so we took that meaning of full and equal access to actually mean full and equal. And so we provided them full and equal access to our store, which meant they were allowed to come in and we weren't going to discriminate against them and kick them out. The government wants us to do. We're not their enforcers. They deserve equal service just like anybody else in our store. And that stance of non-discrimination did not fly. And they would totally disagree that it's discrimination, but that's where we disagree. We think it's discrimination. They don't. We won't do it. So.
Well, so how did the which state agency was it that got wind of this? How did they get wind of it, and how did they come in and enforce it?
Right, so it's Oregon OSHA came in to enforce it, and they did so. So I guess this all started somewhere in mid-June. The public hasn't read the guidelines, so they don't understand that aspect of it with the accommodations in there. And so we got complaints, and we started off with emails with OSHA, and there's very little discussion about guidelines. We felt we were compliant with the guidelines word for word. It's right there, and the guidelines started shifting a little bit, and apparently we crested some unacceptable amount of complaints, which was 9 complaints. We serve our community of 3,000-ish and the greater county of up to 8,000 people. That brought on an inspection last Monday. I believe that's on the 3rd. And we went over the guidelines and kind of just hashed it over a little bit. Nothing too specific. We could tell that there was a disagreement on this kind of language already. We were given time to respond. We responded, kind of elucidating how we viewed this aspect of full and equal access. Oh, and by the way, we've offered free delivery in Lakeview for decades. And since this started in mid-March, we've been doing curbside for free as well. So we already had those accommodations in place also. And so we sent back kind of our rebuttal, and they sent back basically we sent back our rebuttal on Friday, Saturday evening, which we're not even open. They sent back basically saying, no, you're wrong, you're misunderstanding this. And so we were starting to work on a response like, hey, how do we misunderstand this? Where in here are you showing that we misunderstand this? And while working on that, they showed up this Monday, the 10th, and threatened us with a red tag.
What is a red tag?
Yeah, good question. What is a red tag? We have no idea. You can't even look it up. So our understanding of a red tag is that it represents a notice to the public and to employees that the premises is unsafe. And examples are like a gas leak of some kind, a toxic spillage of some kind, that these kinds of things that are imminent threats to the public and employees in the store or the business or whatever, they got red tagged, and that must be resolved before things can resume as normal. So we tried to avoid the red tag by saying, well, we'll just close and we'll go curbside only, because their view of the direct threat was people without masks, which seems overkill. So that was their view. So basically, if someone's in the store without a mask, they're the direct threat. They're analogous to the gas leak. And so we just closed the doors, and they still red tagged us. And it was an incredibly frustrating experience.
When did they red tag you? Because I think that's news from the last time I even talked to you.
They red tagged us that day, Monday.
Okay.
Yeah. So
that means that you can't operate at all?
We're not really sure what that means. It might mean that employees can't come and work even if they want to. It might mean we're not really sure, but as far as we're concerned, they said they're the only ones that can remove the red tag when the threat is abated. And so if customers without masks was the threat, it's been abated and there is no threat, but of course we have to wait for them. On the flip side, this is our community, these are our friends, these are our neighbors, and they need their medicines just like anybody else, and they're going to get their medicines. And that,
well, and
they're going to get it free of discrimination.
Yeah, well, right, and you're the only drugstore in how many miles?
The nearest drugstore is in Klamath, the nearest in-state drugstore is in Klamath Falls, which is 100 miles one way.
Wow. And so you've got often disabled population that would have to drive all the way to Klamath Falls or hope that it gets there in time in the mail to get their medicine.
Right.
That's
right.
Insane.
Yeah.
And so,
Did
they give you any recourse on this or any appeal process or any due process at all?
Definitely no due process. You're not allowed to know your accuser, that's for sure. It's a small town, but And that's kind of understandable. We don't want retaliation. We want this resolved peacefully, and we want it to go away so we can just serve our community. But there's supposed to be some sort of closing conference thing where we kind of go over the alleged violation and then recourse from there. And I think we can appeal at that point. We have 30 days or something like that to appeal at that point. It's all very murky because they're not, you know, they don't answer your questions, and they say things that aren't true. And so things get frustrated and the communication just goes out the window. And it's a big mess. And we don't normally deal with OSHA. We deal with other regulatory agencies that are much better at communicating what we're trying to get to.
Yeah, there's a state pharmacy board, right?
Yeah, there's an Oregon Board of Pharmacy, and they're much more reasonable. We'll see how they handle all this coronavirus stuff, but we'll cross that bridge when we get there.
Wow. So bottom line is you're the only drugstore in Lake County. You were shut down with no due process and given regulations that you didn't understand and no appeals process and no process to remedy the situation and get yourself opened up again.
Not at least in timely manner, not in a manner that we can jump through it, get through it, go through it, and get back to serving our community. But so we're kind of having to serve them no matter what. That's probably not going to go over well, but they need, our community has a need, and we're going to serve that need.
Yeah, I mean, there's really no alternative, is there?
No. And this is all just, and one aspect of it is it's only this guideline, it's only the medical accommodations aspect. There are any number of reasons somebody might not want to wear a mask. There's political reasons, which is First Amendment type stuff. There's religious reasons, there's cultural reasons, and we don't have the training, the time, or the even resources to just start kicking people out over whatever reasons. I mean, the thought of kicking somebody out of your store for a religious reason, that's appalling. That's grotesque in our opinion.
Absolutely.
And we serve people of faith that disagree with us, and we want to serve those people of faith that disagree with us to the full extent. I mean, this is what it means to be an American, and what's what it means to be a Christian. It's just absurd.
So did OSHA give you any guidelines ahead of time before, do businesses get a sort of a heads up of what they're expected to do, or do they only find out when complaints are lodged?
The guidelines are through the Oregon Health Authority. They're kind of the driving force on the actual guidelines themselves. And as far as where we sent the guidelines as a business, no, we had to actually go look them up, and which we did, but it's foreseeable that another business might not know to look them up or how to look them up or anything like that. So.
Okay. So you basically heard on the news, I assume, that Kate Brown had a new mask order, and then you had to go to the Oregon Health Authority to look up how to implement that as a business. And then,
right.
And it's, okay. So that's confirmed. And then, you implemented it to the best of your ability and got complaints anyway, and were given no due process.
Yeah, correct. And that was the rub, is people heard about the mask mandate and they read it in a news article. And so the public started in their minds enforcing that. That's where the 9 complaints came from. I guarantee you that the 9 complainers didn't read the actual guideline.
Well, and that's my other question, too, is did those 9 people who lodged complaints, did they ever talk to you or to any of the management of the store?
Some of them might have. We don't know who the complainers are. We know a tiny, tiny fraction of our community complained about the allowing people with no masks and allowing employees to have accommodations. But most of those people, we were able to explain, look, this is why we're uncomfortable with enforcing that aspect of it. And so a smaller fraction of that small fraction are the people who filed complaints.
Right. Wow.
We were far more frightened by the people coming in and harassing us over it than the actual virus itself. It's far more dangerous to get beat up by somebody who disagrees with you than the level of virus we have in Lake County.
Right. Yeah, I haven't looked at the figures. Do you know off the top of your head?
I think we've had up to around 39 confirmed and or probable cases. I think we have one to somewhere between 1 and 3 active cases at the moment. No hospitalization, no death.
That's amazing. So
we've been very fortunate with that.
Yeah, absolutely. Obviously, it's not a very densely populated county. Everybody's pretty spread out, and there aren't too many of you. But even under 50 in a county of what, 8,000? You said?
I think about 8,000.
Wow. And for that, they're shutting down your pharmacy.
We're not, and they would disagree with that also. The official language would be not that we are shut down. It's that in order to be open fully as normal, our family would be forced to discriminate, and that's why we have chosen to shut down and go curbside delivery only.
Okay, I guess I was unclear on that. Can you explain that again then?
Yeah, so the only way to be open fully, like a normal store, is if we agree to kick out anybody and everybody who is maskless, whether it's a legitimate reason or not.
I see.
And that's what we're unwilling to do. And so in order to try and be compliant, we've had to just close the door and go curbside delivery only.
Gotcha. Okay.
Thanks for checking out the Behind the Curtain podcast. I want to thank my buddy Brian Futch for providing me the theme song, I Am America, produced by Cass Anawati. Join us again next time for another episode of Behind the Curtain with Jeff Reynolds.
Great-grandpa sailed here from across the ocean with nothing else but his dream for a better life. His folks over there shook their heads at such a crazy notion. Still hear his spirit sing, I am America. This land is my land, America. I know one day after I'm gone, someone will carry this dream along, and that's what makes this country so. I am America. Grandpa volunteered for the war across the ocean. There's no price for his country he wouldn't pay. Like so many others, he fought for the cause with great devotion. Just like his daddy, he led the way. Yeah, yeah, yeah. His stories have faded with his years, but his eyes say it loud and clear.